one. It's not his fault that we don't use those events to make us better. And so, therefore, the conclusion is we shouldn't try to put the blame on God because we're facing hardship or temptation in our lives and to blame him for it. It's not part of God's nature. It's not within God's nature. And so it is impossible for God to tempt us to sin. You see? When we look at what the Bible says about God's nature, and James says in verse 13 in chapter 1, God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he tempt anyone. We have to keep in mind God's nature, that John tells us that God is love. Okay? And when you understand the nature of love, the agape, that the word that he uses to describe God's nature, tells us that God always does what? He always does what is in our best interest. Okay? And sin certainly is not within our best interest. So therefore, God cannot tempt us to sin. You see? Because it goes against his very nature to do so. And so, God can no longer, what James is really expressing there is that God can no more tempt us to sin than he himself can sin. All right? So, looking at that part of it, in that verse 13, that, you know, when we are tempted, and again, notice that James says when we are tempted, not if we are tempted, okay? The same way that he talked about it, we looked at in verse 2 when he says, consider it pure joy whenever you face trials, okay? Meaning that we are going to face those. So here again, James uses that word when, not if, indicating what? What's going to happen? We're going to be tempted, okay? We have to realize that. It's not a question of whether we're going to be tempted, it's a question of when, all right? So whenever we are tempted, the first statement there is not to try to put the blame on God. Okay? Instead, all right, verse 14, let's talk about the real source of temptation. Since we eliminate God as a source or the source of temptation, we need to find out and make sure we understand what's the true source of temptation. Where does it really come from? And what's happening here in this next section is that James is going to be stressing our personal responsibility concerning temptation and sin. All right? It's true, is it not, that Satan is a tempter? All right, somebody, I got a couple different scriptures here I want you to take people to read. 1 Thessalonians 3 and verse 5. Let me get somebody to turn there. Who wants to turn there and read that one? All right, Lynette. John 8, verse 44. Who wants to go that one? John 8, verse 44. Tyrone. All right, and then 1 Peter 5 and verse 8. Who wants to do that one? 1 Peter 5, all right. Mr. Judkins? All right, so Satan is the tempter, right? Lynette, 1 Thessalonians 3 and verse 5.
When I could no longer endure it, I sought to know your faith, but by trembling with the tempter that tempted me, and their labor not to be in vain.
Okay, the tempter had tempted you. All right? How else does the Bible describe Satan? John 8, verse 44.
You people are from your father the devil, and you want to do what your father desires. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not uphold the truth because there is no truth in him. Whenever he lies, he speaks according to his own nature because he is a liar and the father of lies.
Okay, so here Jesus describes Satan as what? A murderer. Okay? A liar. And not just a liar, but the father of lies. Okay? And then, not only that, but he says, whenever he lies, he speaks what? His native language. In other words, you know, it's like we speak English, right? Okay? Well, You know, what language does Satan speak? Lies. That's his language. Okay? And so, you know, what's he doing with those lies? Do what? He's deceiving people, which in his is his effort to do what? To tempt us. You see? 1 Peter 5 and verse 8. Sister Jacob?
Stay alert. Watch out for your great enemy, the devil. He prowls around like a roaring lion, looking for someone to devour.
Okay? So here's the picture that we have of Satan. All right? He tempts us. He lies to us. He deceives us. He's like a roaring lion that's just kind of waiting there to pounce on us, to devour us. He wants to catch us up in sin. Right? Would that be an adequate description of Satan as we're looking at these passages? And so, you know, it's easy then to fall into the trap when we are tempted to get ourselves into trouble to say, what?
The devil
made me do it. Right? I mean, after all, you know, the Bible makes it very clear. The devil is the one who tempts us, right? Well, the fact remains that Satan couldn't do anything if we weren't willing partners in our sin. I mean, that's what James wants us to understand here. We need to take a close look on at this whole process of temptation and sin that James outlines for us. And so James is not only saying don't blame God. In the previous section we just got finished, we say don't blame God. What is he going to be saying here? Don't blame the devil, blame yourself.
Russ, I like the King James word when in 1 Peter 5, and he says he's your adversary.
Yeah.
An adversary doesn't want you to do any good.
Right.
He's not going to help you do any good whatsoever. Anything he does for you is going to be to hurt you.
Yes, absolutely.
He's against you.
And God is just the opposite, isn't he? Mm-hmm. You see, God is for us, and Satan is against us. Okay? All right? And so, you know, he and that word adversary also is like a stumbling block. Something that is in our way. And that's where Satan wants to be. But, having said all of that, and realized that, yes, Satan, that's his work, that's what he's all about, we still have to go back and understand, as I said a moment ago, Satan would not be successful at tempting us if we didn't participate with him. Okay? So we have to come back and acknowledge our personal responsibility. If that were not true, okay, if we didn't have to be willing participants in the sin, then what would the situation really be then?
We would have someone to blame.
Well, not only would we have someone to blame, but we would have no way to keep from sin. Think about it. Okay? If we don't have a responsibility and we're not willing participants in our sin, then that simply means that we're not willing, but we can't help it. So, you know, we sin and there's nothing we can do to keep from sinning. Well, how unbiblical is that? We're fixing to find out. Chuck?
We have free will. That goes both ways.
Exactly.
Satan can't hold us captive, and God's not going to hold us up above him.
Exactly.
We always have that.
And so, goes back to the statement that we are, what kind of participants? Willing.
Free will.
We are willing participants in the sin. Let's take a look at James. He outlines this temptation and sin process, all right, in verses 14 and 15, all right? Look at what he says. When are we tempted here? Okay? Each one is tempted when? By what? His own desires. Okay? His own desires. those desires are those evil desires that lure and entice us. Now, when we talk about these desires that we have, okay, notice that he says, when by whose desires? What now? Okay. His own desires. So what does that imply here? What do we need to understand from this? Don't miss this part.
We are responsible for our actions.
Right. But you have, each of us have our own desires, don't we? So in other words, what we have to understand is the desires that one person has may not be the desires of another person. You see? So in other words, one person may have a real problem with some, they have you know, some desires in a particular thing that another person, that's not an issue for them. You see? Because we're all different. And so we have to, again, it stresses the personal responsibility here of our own, these are my own desires. They're not your desires, they're my desires. That get me into trouble. See, so that's, he right away starts out with making sure we're understanding this is personal. This is not even group, okay? It's like, you know, all of us in here, we got the same desire. No, we don't necessarily. It's every single individual person, your own desires. They're going to be different from other people. Now, we may have the same, some of the same desires, okay? But again, one thing to understand is that some things that one person are tempted with and have certain desires, it's not an issue for other people. Okay? So by his own desires, he lures and entices us. Okay? And then he says he's dragged away and enticed. Okay? Some of the... If you look at what is that enticed? What is that indicating here?
Maggot.
A maggot? Yeah, they're kind of enticing too.
Magnet.
A magnet, right? Okay. And so, what does it do? Yeah. Look at the wording that he uses here, and you know, think about it. He's using the word lure. What comes to mind?
Fishing.
Okay, and do what? Yeah, and so when you go out fishing, what do you use for bait? You use things, lures, bait, and so forth that the fish have a difficult time resisting. You see, that's the picture here that we can form this. You know. You know, I tell you, I like to fish a whole lot, and I got some lures that are just downright ugly lures. Okay, and you think, fish can eat that, or I wouldn't eat that, but I'm not a fish. You know, yeah, fish really like those things. You know, it's a matter of what does the fish like. See? But again, going back to something we just said a moment ago, different kind of fish, right? Different kind of fish like different kind of bait. So you can't use the same bait on to catch all fish. Not only that, this is a free lesson in fishing, okay? I won't charge any extra for this morning, right? Not only that, but when you're fishing, you have to be concerned and take into consideration a lot of different things, like the time of the day, the weather conditions, the water temperature. You see? That all of those things make a difference in terms of whether the fish is more easily enticed. Okay? So, therefore, does Satan look at the conditions in our lives that make it easier to entice us? And he knows what kind of bait works on each one of us, you see? So we need to keep in mind, you know, he's paying attention to those details. All right? I mean, I have been out fishing where the water was crystal clear, and you can see fish, and I'm actually dropping a lure right on top of the fish, right in front of them, and they won't bite that lure. Okay?
I could vouch for that.
Yeah. You ever come see, you come back all the time without any fish. You know, all the time we say the fish aren't biting today. Right? Well, I mean, I think it's just a perfect analogy of how Satan works. And sometimes Satan can walk away from us, from each one of us, and say, just weren't biting today. That's what I want to do, all the time. Yeah, they'll come back and fish another day. Okay? But my point here is that Satan knows us. He knows you. He knows what conditions need to exist, okay, in order to catch you in sin. But even, here's another important part of this. You know, I've read all kinds of fishing magazines. You probably read a lot of them too, right? You know, Bass Magazine, all kinds of them. And they tell you about all these perfect conditions, you know. And here's the perfect conditions to be able to catch fish. And here's the conditions when it's not so good. But you know what? What I have found out over years and years of fishing, those fish have not read those magazines. Okay? So they don't know necessarily that, you know, because I've had days when it was perfect conditions according to the magazines and not caught a single fish. And I've had days when I've been out there when it was not, it, you know, you weren't supposed to be able to catch fish that time, and I caught fish. You see? So, what do we need to conclude from that? Get the fish to read the magazine, right? No. What we need to conclude from that is that you never know. Okay? You always have to be ready. Because even if the conditions aren't right, Satan might still try to tempt you. Okay? But the other side of that coin is this. Even when the conditions are right to tempt you, you can still resist him. He can walk away from a good day of fishing empty-handed. Because again, it always comes back to your will, your choice. See? And that fish, you know, on that perfect day when the conditions are exactly right, see, he's still got to decide whether he's hungry enough to go after that bait and to try to eat it, or whether he's not going to eat it right now. Okay? We have to decide. Ultimately, whatever the conditions are, whatever the temptations are, whatever the bait is being used by Satan, it comes down to our choice as to whether or not we're going to take it. Okay? But we are tempted when those our own evil desires, okay, by those things that we're dragged away and enticed, okay? Verse 15, he says, then after desire has conceived, all right, that word conceived, what does it refer to? What do we think about conception? Yeah, you're planting a seed, okay? When a baby, before a baby can be born, what has to happen? You got to have a seed planted, okay? All right, we can have a sex lesson 101 here, okay? All right? Okay. All right? That's called conception. All right? When the seed, you know, connects to the egg, it implants, and then there is conception. And that's the idea here. And I think that's why James uses that word, because he wants us to be thinking in terms of a seed that is being planted. You put a seed in the ground, you see, and it dies. And then what happens to it? After it dies, it grows, you see. And that's the idea that James wants to understand, that this when we're tempted, You see, those desires are all caught up in there, and that sin, or the idea of the sin, is planted or conceived within us. Notice how he says the next thing that he says, it does what? Once it's conceived, it does what? It gives birth to sin. You see? So that's why he's using it that way, to say, look, this is all about conceiving something here. You see? And once something is conceived, then the next reaction to that, the normal process is that birth is going to take place. Okay? And that's the process of sin. And then it becomes what? Fully grown. Okay? It becomes fully grown. And then, when it is full grown, it gives birth to death. Okay? So, here's the thing. Let's take a real, real good closer look at this process here. Okay? Because one of the things we have to understand is throughout this process, there are several, let's just call them jumping off points. Okay? There are several places anywhere along this line that we can go, nope, I see what's happening, you know, and we can walk away from the temptation. But we have to be aware of what is going on. Because again, Satan is there to tempt us. But whether we are tempted and fall into sin, or actually whether we fall into sin, not whether we're tempted, but whether we fall into sin, depends on the choices that we make. And let me just say this. Being tempted is not the same thing as sinning. Okay? We need to understand that. We're going to be tempted. Notice again, James says, when we are tempted. Temptation is going to come. But temptation is not the same thing as sin. Jesus was tempted, was he not? Okay? Go and look at, you know, the Gospels and the beginning of Jesus' ministry. He went out into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. Okay? The writer of Hebrews tells us that Jesus was tempted how? In every way, such as we are, yet was without sin. Okay? So he was tempted, but he didn't sin. And we can be tempted and not sin. So we have to pay attention to the jump-off point, so to speak, and realize that there are places in this process, you say, from where it begins to where it develops into sin, that we can, you know, we can jump off and say, no, not going there. That's our choice in exercising our free will. So let's take a closer look at this whole process here, okay? Our desires that we have, okay? He starts out here talking about the desires that we have, right? But we have to understand that our desires can be sinful, or they may not be sinful. But sometimes, even though our desires may not be sinful themselves, we may be tempted to satisfy those desires in sinful ways. Everybody got that? So the desire itself may not be sinful, but how we satisfy that desire may be sinful. For instance, God gives us, creates us as human beings with certain sexual desires. Okay? And He also gives us His way of satisfying those desires. But those desires, which are good, there's nothing wrong with us having those desires. God gave them to us. But those desires can entice us into sin, like fornication or adultery or homosexuality. Do you understand, you know, what we're saying here? So the desire itself may not be anything wrong with it. So there are some desires that are good desires, and there are other desires that are sinful desires. Okay? So James here says when by our own sinful or evil desires that we are enticed, okay? But we also have to keep in mind that it may be by the desires that we have that take us into satisfying those desires in wrong ways. Okay? The desires then conceive when we entertain that desire for a while. Okay? Just kind of let that thing brood. See? I want this particular thing. Okay? My neighbor has it, and I want it. See? And I stew about it. You see, one of the things that we have to understand here, if again, go back to the analogy we were using about planting a seed. Okay? That our thoughts are the main avenue of conception. All right, that's where the conception takes place, is in our thinking. And so sometimes we have to look at it in terms of, you know, letting it just kind of brew there for a while. Maybe it's the people that we hang out with and the places that we go that also contribute to that conception. Okay? So if I've got a problem with alcohol, with drinking, okay, and I'm hanging out with people who are drinking all the time, or I'm hanging out in bars,
yeah.
Okay, and I say, I'm just going in there to pray with other folks that are drinking, right?
Yeah,
you
right.
See, am I not putting myself in a position where that conception can be taking place?
Yeah.
You see? Again, think about the conditions that are ripe for fishing. See? And so when we put ourselves in those kinds of positions and places and so forth, then the temptations are going to come our way. Satan is going to take advantage of those situations. Even if he doesn't create the condition, he will take advantage of it. Right? So then, you know, they're going to come our way, but you know, we realize Satan is there waiting to devour us. He's waiting to pounce on us. We got to, you know, put that mental picture in your mind. Okay? When we entertain certain desires over time, then we're just simply asking for trouble. What we're doing. Think about it and brood about it. You know, man, my neighbor's got the nicest lawnmower. I sure like that lawnmower. I sure wish I had that lawnmower, but I can't afford it. Man, I like that lawnmower. Sure would love to ride instead of having to walk. That lawnmower, if I repainted it, he wouldn't know. Doesn't the Bible say something about thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's good? You see? But you see how that process can easily work on us and whatever. Doesn't have to be a lawnmower. Fill in the blank with whatever you can easily be enticed with, whatever your desire is. You may not want a lawnmower, ladies. Okay. That's when you start that you crossing the line. You see, but you see the process. It starts up here. All right, that's where it's conceived, and it just starts developing and growing up there. All right. Tommy makes an interesting statement. I think he's exactly right. He says, we don't usually sin immediately when tempted, but after thinking about it a while. I mean, you know, just think about the stuff that you struggle with and how often do you, you know, you, that temptation is there, but you just jump right to it immediately? Usually. You know, we're going to think about how we can do it without anybody noticing. You know, is it really going to hurt anybody? or whatever, all the kinds of things that we, mental games that we play, and sometimes even trying to justify the sin. You say. But it's all up here in our mind, okay? Over time, the desire conceives, and that's where we cross the line. It gives birth to sin. That's when we sin there. And then what happens from that particular point is when we leave that unchecked, right? We've gone ahead and gotten into the sin, and we leave it unchecked or unrepented of, okay? Then that sin becomes fully grown in that it dominates us in our lives. Well, I think you're right. God certainly doesn't remember them. He tells us He remembers our sin no more. In other words, He doesn't hold them against us, okay? But people aren't God.
Yeah, that's right.
And people will oftentimes, if they want to get at us about something, then, you know, they don't have any problem using things that we've done in our past to hurt us, you know, what have you. But I think the way that we have to approach that and handle it is go, think what you want, say what you want. God's already forgiven me of that, so, you know, do whatever you want to with it. I don't care. You know, it's a non-issue to me. Non-issue to God, so why should I worry about it? Okay? And don't let people, you know, try to hurt us that way. You know, they try, but again, I think it's our choice whether we allow them to do it or not. Okay? Okay? What happens when this sin becomes fully grown is that it has a place in our lives that tends to rule and control us. Okay? And that's a problem for us. It's not just where, you know, I did this sin, but this now becomes how I'm living.
Okay?
We do. Kind of share the guilt a little bit. Let's spread it around. We don't want to be selfish in that area. Because selfishness is sin. Right? So I'm going to share my guilt with other people. When we get to that point where sin, whatever that sin might be, is ruling our lives and controlling us, if we don't get rid of it, it's going to kill us. And that's what he says it gives birth to. Yeah. If we don't get rid of that sin out of our lives, it will kill us spiritually. We will be lost. We'll die in our sin. So James is kind of outlining this process as it begins. But again, you see several points in there where, you know, we can jump off and go, I don't know, I'm not going to allow this to happen. Because all of the first parts of it are happening up here. Okay. Now, having said all of that, one of the things we have to make sure we don't misunderstand is, you know, the difference between thinking and doing a sin. Okay? Is it okay for me to let it all just brew up here for me to think about it as long as I don't do it? No, it's not okay. Jesus makes that very clear in the Sermon on the Mount, right? You see? Where does the sin really begin? Where does it take root? It starts up here, but it takes root where? In the heart. Okay? So in my heart, if I really want to kill you, okay, I wish you were dead. Because I hate you so much. But I know that killing is wrong. Alright? Murder is a sin, so I'm not going to murder you, but I sure wish you was dead. All right? What does Jesus say? That's right. If a man looks at a woman lustfully, he has already committed adultery with her in his heart. See? The sin takes place in the heart, even if it never takes place physically. Okay? I may have done something and I got to face you and I'm worried about it, and so I've decided that the way I'm not going to have to face the consequences is I got a nice lie all put together, and I'm going to tell this lie, and I got my story all straight, and I practiced it so that if you ask me several times, I won't make a mistake. You see, so I'm ready for you, but we never have that conversation. Have I sinned? Because in my heart, I was determined, you know, time comes, here's what I'm going to do. Now, if, you know, that process comes along and I come to the point, I come to my senses, you know, like the wayward son, right? If I come to my senses and I realize that what I have done is sin, then I say, Father, I've sinned against you and against God. Say, that's part of my jumping off point. See, that I can repent of that and realize that, no, that's me thinking about this and planning this way is sinful. And I need to stop this. See? So again, we have to understand that the sin can take place without us ever physically doing it. But also we can repent of it. Right, before we even do it. See? That lawnmower that you got that I really want, you see, and all my plans to get it, but then I come to the point where I realize, you know, it's wrong for me to do that. I need to stop this. And it's not my lawnmower. If I want a lawnmower, I need to go buy my own, and I need to quit lusting after yours. And I repent of that, and sin is over. But all of that points to what? Chuck, what did you say earlier?
Free will.
My free will. The choices that I make. Okay? Chuck and I talked about this before, and I told him, anytime I ask you anything, just say my free will. So he knows the answer now. He doesn't answer right on me. No, he did a great job. All right, so let's see. We're just about out of time here, aren't we? So the wisdom here that James is giving to us, all right, in avoiding sin when we are tempted, is that again, sometimes we need to avoid people, we need to avoid places, we need to avoid situations which tempt us, and we need to keep those desires in check. So if I know that, you know, certain situations present conditions that are right for me to be tempted, I need to stay away from those things. Because failing to control our desires, because that's where it all starts, failure to control those will lead to spiritual death. All right? Any comments as we finish up here? Everybody got a handle on sin? Right. We know where it comes from. We also know what we can do to keep ourselves from falling to it. Nancy?
I just want to say,